The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
I am your host. I am here, and I'm very delighted to be here today. This is a hot August going on right now. It's the 25th of August here in Topanga Canyon. It's also the week of my 70th birthday celebration, and let me tell you, I've been on the air 23 years, and there are a lot of incredible people that have actually been here on the show in joining in dialogues, and one of my favorites has always been Harvey Wasserman, and we'll be getting to him very shortly. We really want to thank today's title sponsors, and we have emergencymanagementsolutions.org, we have LA Lifestyle, we have Sir Jason Winter's Tea, which I told CW I want him to pack it in all the medical kits that we're giving away, and he's agreed to do that. So MSG Global One, Emergency Disaster Preparedness. Hey, plan for the worst and hope for the best. That's what I always say. And drink a couple of Jason Winter's Teas while you're at it, because we're putting them in the kit. And then there's the supplements of the stars with LALifestyle.com. Also, pay particular attention to the people that you're listening to on the show today. Debbie Ringchop will pop in and out because she's one of our great organizers of information. And she's well-balanced in background in financial matters. She's, I think everybody on the show is a secured party creditor, isn't it? Yeah, we are, aren't we? Yeah. So that's a whole thing of itself. And Harvey, as I said, is one of my favorites. And I want the privilege of introducing to him today what it is that we're up to. We may or may not have Tim Turner on, but we do have, what did we decide to call that, Kelby? We have some unverified breaking news that Kelby will be sharing with us.
We like that.
Did you like that? He made that up. He knows how to take care of himself. That man is careful. Actually, Kelby, I rant and rave at the beginning of the show, but I would much rather just start the show off with about 5 minutes on what's happening, and then we'll come back to you later for more. How about that?
Sure. You want me to go right now?
Yeah, I do. I want the unverified breaking news, because I know people have been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and then waiting. And I also know there's a lot of trash out on the internet right now that's just absolutely not true, put out by people that know extremely well how to lie. And I want people to know what, you know, the heart of this whole thing is, and I think you've got the scoop for them. So, scoop them.
Well, there's many components to what's happening, some of which are what happened last Friday with the initial phone call with Regan, and he called into the org,
Well, let's not go there, and I'll tell you why. First of all, most people don't know what that's all about. What I want people to know is about what's actually happening. We've evolved through something. There's been, you know, whenever you do something new, Kelby, trash always comes up as part of the deal. And I'm sure Harvey knows exactly what I'm talking about. So let's talk about...
Are you just wanting to discuss what we found out that just came in this morning?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Is that what came in this morning?
I'm trying to verify which trash bucket you're wanting me to dig in.
I don't really want trash right now. I want the breakthroughs that we've had, because we've had some huge breakthroughs. We've got a solidified central committee. A lot of the chaff has fallen away. For listeners who don't know what it is that we're talking about, we're actually talking about the restored Republic of America. We're restored, folks, and we're in a state of condition that we've never been in before for how many years?
Yeah, and Dr. Val, the reason why I wanted to make sure it was called unverified is because it came in about an hour ago, and when you get this kind of information, you want to make sure you verify it before you put it out. However, I have kind of already had somebody call in and say that they had a relationship to a degree with this person, Mr. Livingston, which is the person presenting the fact that we never nullified our Constitution. Whether we have or have not, that's not what I'm trying to talk about today. But this person was really scared of this man and said, you have no idea the danger of this person. And again, that's third party and it's unverified at this point. But she did mention that he once showed her a website that had to do with killing federal judges. As a matter of fact, the title of the website was 101 Ways to Kill a Federal Judge.
That's terrible.
So it's horrible. It's horrible. And she then brought it to the FBI, and she doesn't know what ultimately ended up happening with it. Well, that link went down. That website went down, and what ended up happening is somebody went out there and dug it up on the web archives that the government keeps and then forwarded it to us as basically an informational piece for us to look at. And it is probably one of the single most disturbing pieces of data that I have ever seen. And any person that would have written this, I have to seriously question about their psyche, number one. Number two, the fact that they didn't get arrested raises a huge question to me. I understand free speech, but there's many other things that are now being dug up. And all I got to say is anybody that wants to tie themselves to this, you might as well put your name on the list and of people under federal investigation because this is dangerous. And we're going to verify this, and I'll come back out and tell you whether we have found out this to be absolutely true. But now we have two different data sources bringing this together, and we're going to verify the origination of the IP of that website. And once that's done, it's over. This person did this.
No, that's really great. But what? And by the way, this stuff will continue to happen as we move through the layers. That's just the way it is. We'll bring up what is not what we are. What for a new listener, and we have new listeners every week, Kelby?
Yes.
They need to know what we're talking about.
Well, there was basically a movement called the Restore America Plan, which is what we've all been pushing. Once we re-inhabited the republics by voting in our interim president, which is James Timothy Turner, and we had a 92% republic-wide vote, meaning all the states in the union came together and went behind this and voted Mr. Turner as to be the president of the republics. Now, that was submitted to The Hague, the United Nations, and the UPU as a registration process. There is not an approval process. And there instantly was a division amongst the quote-unquote leadership of the Restore America plan. And we don't know exactly why. We're not exactly privileged to it, but we have a divided leader. We have a divided group of leaders. And I am staying on the side of the Restored Republics, and some people are staying on the side of Restore America plan. And we don't all exactly know why, but...
Well, let me just
Mr.
interrupt
Livingston,
here.
Go ahead.
Let me just interrupt here for a minute, because what's really important for listeners to get right now is that we are republic. We have been restored. The government is in the process of being put together right now. All the right people are moving into the right places. Things are accelerating at amazing rates. Miracles have happened, even with the purchase of an office building.
Yeah.
The one at Kalamazoo office is worth in the millions of dollars. You know, we got it for some great rate, right? Okay, so, Harvey, we're creating a new government. What can I tell you? And we're creating it according to the Constitution. And a lot of the stuff that you've been fighting is going to be changing.
Well, I hope so. I mean, we really got to get rid of nuclear power plants, nuclear weapons, and we've got to move forward and find some democracy here in this country.
Well, you did something.
Have to end the corporate personhood. That would be a good start.
Oh, yeah. Kelby, do you want to say anything? Ken, do you want to say anything about the corporate personhood? but about, like, maybe a minute or two, okay?
How many hours do we have to do
this? No, I knew you were going to say that.
Explain it. Okay, I'll explain it.
No, I'll bring you back to your segment later, I promise. I won't cheat you out of that.
All right, well, let's define that. During the course of the 1800s, starting in 1851, there was an act passed by Congress called the Limited Liability Act. That established the ability to create an aggregate corporation that would have limited liability. What that means is individual living men and women could act and perform things for that entity called a corporation and limit their exposure to liability. The way they operate in the public to do that is to have bonding that bonds them against any acts that happen as long as they're not out of malfeasance or criminal. So from that point forward, the next 160 years, incrementally, which is how this whole system of the master corporation has been put in place, corporations progressively were brought to the point of having equal rights within the corporate venue so that they can do anything, and all of those standing behind it, officers and so forth, could have basically no responsibility. So whether
right, that's correct.
And so whether they did something minor or they destroyed a planet, they could all say, not me, it's the corporation, which doesn't live or breathe and has no responsibility.
Now, Harvey, have you been interfacing with these corporations since the 1970s as well, 1973?
Well, the corporations have become the most powerful entity in the history of the world, you know, outstripping popes and dictators and countries and you name it. There's never been a more powerful institution than the multinational corporation. And they are who are, you know, right now running the world. And as was accurately said, they don't have any liability. The guys who run them are insulated from any recourse in terms of destroying the planet or destroying their neighbors. I mean, we've seen that now at the in the Gulf spill, and we'll continue to see it as time goes on. So that is the number one problem we face in the world today. Really, it's a gigantic barrier to making any kind of meaningful social change. And we're having to deal with that. At least people are starting to talk about it. That's a good step forward.
Now, what have you, we were stating figures about what it was like in 1973. Would you state some of those figures and show what this movement has actually accomplished since the 70s, as far as nuclear weapons are concerned?
Well, nuclear weapons and power plants are both down. Theoretically. Nuclear power plants, there were supposed to be 1,000 in the U.S. by the year 2000. And we have since had the year 2000, thankfully, and there were only 104. That's way too many, but it's not 1,000. Worldwide, we have about 450 or so nuclear plants. The only people really pushing nuclear plants actually are governments, strangely enough. There are corporations, of course, behind the nuclear power industry, but they are all dependent on government funding. And that's another thing that's happened with the corporation. We've seen, as an institution, the corporation has developed a parasitic relationship with governments. And what we have in many countries around the world, especially in the industrial West, is something called lemon socialism or private socialism or corporate socialism, what was known in Germany as national socialism. Although that phrase national socialism was actually coined by Theodore Roosevelt, one of my least favorite guys, and he talked about in a time where there was a massive social upheaval, Theodore Roosevelt talked about national socialism in which the corporation and the government would basically be in partnership. Although in this case, of course, the dominant partner is the corporation. Corporations, because of unlimited campaign spending, can come in and buy or at least rent the Congress and the president whenever they feel like it, and they in turn give taxpayer money to the corporations, depending on the size of the bribe. And so that's the system we have now, where the private corporations are above the public recourse and use their power in the government to steal money and power from the public.
Just a short question here. Are there any corporations that you know of on this planet that you look at with respect?
Well, it's impossible because the corporations, even if they wanted to do the right thing, or even if they're managers and owners, well, the owners are a different story, but even if the managers wanted to do the right thing at a corporation, they are prohibited by law because we've seen this a number of times where actually, for example, Ben and Jerry, who have that ice cream company, they went public and then they were required to sell to corporations that they weren't exactly keen on selling to because the law requires that a public-owned company has no other duty, no other mandate except to maximize profits. That's all the corporations are required to do, and that's all they're allowed to do. And, you know, any corporation, if it's public-owned, that goes around trying to save the world is going to get sued by its owners. By its stockholders, if in fact the saving the world has a detrimental impact on the bottom line.
Do you perceive that? What do you perceive as an alternative?
Well, we need to have altered corporate charters. The original charters for corporations basically required public service, and that the employees of the corporation be well treated. And of course, exactly the opposite.
It doesn't fit
exactly
you
the opposite is being done at all our corporations now.
Oh, got it. Let me just check here and see if we have any team members that would like to ask a question. Debbie, have you got anything you want to ask Harvey?
Hello.
Hey,
hi.
Mute was on.
Yeah.
I just, in general, what do we have as far as nuclear here in our country versus around the world? I mean, we still have a little left, right?
Well, we have about 5,000 nuclear warheads, as best I can tell, and we have 104 nuclear power plants.
And how long would it take? How many nukes are actually required to destroy the world if you fired them at once, like five or six?
Oh, maybe 10. I mean, you know, what you get if you, it's like throwing a match in a lighted in a room full of gasoline.
Yeah.
I mean, you because the ecological impacts of blowing off that many nukes would just utterly destroy the global ecology.
Yeah, and
bring on something like nuclear winter, which, you know, is the blacking out of the sun and the dropping of temperatures enormously. And, you know, Carl Sagan did a lot of the pioneer work on this.
But do you feel that we've got enough security around what we have? I mean, obviously we don't want to have anything if we can eliminate them all, but are they secure enough that we don't feel that accidents are as prevalent?
No, they're not secure enough. You can never have full security with weapons like that.
Yeah, and you know, also I've heard stories that some of the nuclear plants that were built years ago are starting to leak. Is there any truth?
Well, they've been leaking. There are all nuclear plants leak. They're just too big, too complicated. You're never going to have, and no one, even in the industry, they're not going to claim total, full containment of all radioactive materials. I mean, it's just not possible. And now what we're seeing, especially what happened at Vermont Yankee, where in Vernon, Vermont, where there's a real serious and solid campaign going on to shut that plant, there was a hearing, and the utility company was asked about certain pipes, and the company denied that they had those pipes at all. And then 6 months later, it turned out they not only do they have those pipes, but they've been leaking tritium and other very dangerous substances into the ground and into the waters of the Connecticut River. So this is a serious situation.
You know, I was also, are you familiar with a study on the use of the HAARP machine on the Japanese nuclear plant?
No, I have not heard that.
Yeah, well, they were talking
know?
About how they were practicing with the HAARP machine, seeing if they could pinpoint the earthquakes. And the place that this is just, Kelby says, unverified information, okay?
Right.
But that they were actually using the HAARP machine to practice on a Japanese nuclear plant, and they were able to cause it trouble. Now,
well,
everybody
actually,
would want to do that.
There was a very large earthquake that hit the Kashiwazaki
That's the one.
Complex.
That's the one.
There were seven reactors there which were forced to shut.
That's the one I'm talking about, that one. There is a report that something called the HAARP machine found that. Does anybody on the call have information on that?
Yeah, this is Kelby. I've heard a lot of unverified information about HAARP. We know it's real. We know it is a 1 billion watt generator that's based and ran by the Naval Command in Alaska, and it throws up a $1 billion watt beam into the hemisphere, which bounces off, and then they target it to specific regions. The common currency that happens between earthquakes is they see a rainbow effect above the ground of the epicenter for a few days prior to the earthquake happening. They'll run the generator, I guess, and supposedly point it into the ground, and when it's entering into the ground, it creates a heat and a vibration deep underneath the ground, which is what causes the earthquake.
So there, Harvey, what do you think about that?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we look at the causing of it, there's a lot of unverified information. Some of it is verified. Well, I call that Boots and Coots. Do you know who they are?
No.
Boots and Coots actually was building the cleanup material for the oil rigs in the British Petroleum area in that whole oil mess spill, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I found out that Halliburton had bought up all the materials to clean up oil messes the week before that oil went. And then I saw the 60 Seconds report where it was verified that they had been told not to drill there. They had been told not to, if they were going to do it, not to drill so fast. They took out things that would have cooled down the shaft. Everything that could be done wrong was done wrong. And then, oops, we had this explosion. So Boots and Coots was the ones that made the materials to clean up the explosion, which had been purchased by Halliburton the week before. So I decided I'd call them up. Well, they wouldn't talk to me.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But that was just how far the investigation, I started to investigate it, and everything I could find pointed to the fact that they had prior information, and it looked like this was just a different face of a HAARP event. Like missing cause for a purpose.
Well, you know, what could be their purpose in...
Well, I've heard that there is a desire, and if anybody else on the call has heard this, to actually reduce the number of people on the planet.
Well, they're very effective, apparently.
And that would be a really good way of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if there's not enough vacation land available or whatever it is that people are wanting, but I hear a lot of things. I mean, I get all kinds of reports all the time. And I can't put them all on. I don't know that they're all true. What I do want people to start thinking about is, who are we? What can we do? And what our work is all about, Harvey, is we're sovereigns, you know?
Uh-huh.
Dr. Rutledge, you're on. I was wondering, you know, as a sovereign, you might want to just comment something to Harvey, and then we'll come back to your segment in a few minutes.
What do you mean, in regard to being a sovereign or?
To being a sovereign, to whatever is being triggered for you in this conversation that we're having.
Well, I just wanted to, for me, I look at science, and of course, you know, I look at alternatives and everything else. First, do no harm is a mantra that a true doctor goes by. I make a delineation between nuclear arms and nuclear power. I'd like to ask what the problem is with nuclear power.
How many hours do you have? I mean, nuclear power is a complete disaster. There is a technical difference between nuclear power and weapons, that's for sure. But nuclear power has, you know, just been an utter failure.
If you
want to start into it, we can, but it's going to take a while.
No, just give them a list of the things that nuclear power costs us.
Well, first of all, they can't. Nuclear power can't compete with renewables. In fact, you know, the study, most recent study, just came out of North Carolina. Solar is cheaper than nuclear, and so that should end the conversation right there.
Right, but you can't run a steel mill with a windmill or with a solar panel.
Well, you get enough of them, you can.
I know, but that takes away a lot of land mass, does it not?
No, it does not. Wind does not take a substantial amount of land because the base of the towers is very small.
Well, when you look at the science, it seems that nuclear...
The science is completely against nuclear power. The science has, well, you're allowed to disagree, but you're also allowed to be wrong. And nuclear power cannot compete in the marketplace. It cannot solve its waste problem. It's vulnerable to terrorism. It heats up rivers. In fact, we've had a number of rivers that have been, the number of plants that are shutting right now because the rivers that they're supposed to draw their cooling from have become too hot. And they can't run. In fact, they're over 90 degrees, some of these rivers, including one at Browns Ferry in Alabama. Every nuclear plant releases radiation on a regular basis, and that radiation has been linked to all forms of disease in the areas. It's just another mess.
You know, one of the things I remember Tony Robbins years ago talking about the nuclear dumps, where the nuclear waste is dumped, and he said that the nuclear parks were contaminated for like up to 200 million years or something in that part of the country. And then I said, well, why? And I asked Jonathan, a friend of mine in the Global Security Commission, I said, so why don't we just put the nuclear waste in a rocket and send it to the moon? He said, because if it didn't get there, it would kill us.
That's correct.
So, that's how serious nuclear waste is.
Right.
Yeah,
there's technologies now that store that waste.
Where do they store it?
Technologies that safely store nuclear waste. If they'd had them, they'd use them. You got 70,000 tons, or approaching 70,000 tons, of high-level so-called spent nuclear fuel rods that are sitting at reactor sites all over the country. Reprocessing is a failure. There's nothing to be done with this stuff except sit it there and hope that terrorists don't get their hands on it.
We're on the air with Harvey Wasserman. You're listening as Dr. Rettledge and Harvey have a dialogue. We're taking a break right now to say thanks to our sponsors. God bless them. Without our sponsors, you know, you can't really be on the air. So if you like good mailing lists, you want to check out Stardust. Stardust has 100,000 really great people on their mailing list, and they actually buy your products, things of that nature, and the prices are quite reasonable. If you call Ra at Stardust at 828-665-0411, that's 828-665-0411, and tell him Val sent you, oh, by gosh, he will actually give you a discount. How about that? Roberto's Bungalows in beautiful San Pancho, Mexico, 45 minutes north of Puerto Vallarta with my heavy foot, 971-239-4120. Tell Steve and Diana that you are ready to come and forget it all and just lie on the beach and iced tea or margaritas, your choice. Emotional stress clinging from the past, check out my website, Dr. Valerie, and Dr. is all spelled out, and I'll actually give you a free consultation because this is the fastest thing I know. My telephone number is 310-455-8623. We thank our sponsors. Gosh bless them. LALifestyle.com, Nutritional Supplements of the Stars. Visit LALifestyle.com. Jason Winter's Tea, rejuvenate your health with the original formula, but a detoxifying tea. Found in your local health food store. Visit TRISUNINTERNATIONAL.com and check it out. These guys are really taking care of us. EMS Global One, disaster preparedness and emergency management solutions around the globe. Visit emsgo.org. And by the way, you want one of those emergency kits? We'll be picking for this month soon. Send me an email at val@wakingupinamerica.com and say, I want one. That means the emergency kit, we're giving one major kit a month and one secondary kit, and by gosh, they'll have Jason Winter's tea in them. So I'm really happy about that. So join us for that. We're on the air with Harvey Wasserman of Solartopia, an anti-nuke guy that goes way back and has made a tremendous difference for America. We were just in the middle of a discussion with Dr. Rettledge, and I want to invite you to actually, we'll have Dr. Rettledge in a moment. He'll actually be talking about the glycemic index, and right now we've got a race for the rainforest. If you go to the website, you feel helpless, can't do anything, go to the website, sign up for Race for the Rainforest, and you can save marine wetlands, American prairies, or oceans. Oh, yes, you can. And you can save up to like 7 square feet of them a day. You keep in on that. We save thousands of acres in the rainforest, where the rainforest is actually the lungs of the planet, okay? When the rainforest goes down, so does our oxygen supply. And me personally, I just love oxygen. So with that, I'm going to bring you to Dr. Rutledge and what great things that you present to us. So take it away, Dr. Rutledge, and tell us how to live well.
Well, I have a sweet subject to talk about. Not the way you think. It's about sugar and a glycemic index. And glycemic index is, I would encourage people to go to, and I'm not affiliated with this site on the web, but it's www.glycemicindex.com. If you take a look at that, you start looking at, I guess in layman's terms, you would call it sugar potential, and its potential to really tax the pancreas. What happens when you eat a sugar load, the pancreas will say, oh, it's a lot of sugar in the bloodstream, and it will squirt out a lot of insulin to help drive that sugar in the cell. Well, once you do that for so long, the cells become resistant, and that's how you become diabetic. So they become resistant to the uptake of glucose or sugar. So one of the best ways to lead a anti-aging or age-less life, if you will, is to have a diet that really cuts out simple, refined carbohydrates, meaning table sugar or fruit juices that are devoid of the fiber. If you eat the fruit, it's wonderful because the fiber will tamper the glycemic index or load. But when you drink the juice without the fiber, that is gone, and so it's a ton of sugar load. So I would encourage many, if you really want to look at the bulge that is coming around your waist, if you have diabetes or high blood pressure or dyslipidemia, which is high cholesterol, and alterations in your cholesterol profile, really take a look at your diet. Things that are really high in glycemic index are things such as pastas and breads, obviously the candies and desserts and things like that. Now, I'm not a Nazi in that regard. I mean, I don't think anyone should live a life of depravity. However, make those things be an occasion. Once a week, once every 2 weeks, have a sugar fix, if you will. I'll give you a quick little example. I recently, or actually currently, am working with a patient that I have just detoxed off of sugar. Sugar is the most addictive substance on the planet.
Worse than heroin?
Actually, more than cocaine.
Really?
I'm going to get to that. Yeah. I'm not sure who the scientists were, but that was just at an A4M conference, and one of the scientists were talking about that put Sprague Dawley rats in a controlled environment, one with and they both had, they had access to sugar and had access to cocaine.
Wow.
Overwhelmingly, they went for the sugar and kept going for the sugar and kept going for the sugar. So it's probably one of the, I believe it's probably the most addictive substance on our planet. And one of the reasons that is that many people are stressed, they're working really hard, and your adrenals become taxed. What happens with that, then your transmitters go low. And so most everyone has a serotonin deficit. Well, when you eat sugar, it boosts serotonin momentarily and makes you feel good, but then you crash. So it's a yo-yoing effect. So bottom line is that if you really want to, I could really get into science of things called N-glycation products and things, but it's a too deep of a discussion. But the bottom line is really start looking at what you intake. I have patients send me a diary. You would be amazed at what people discover when they actually write down what they are putting in their mouth.
Yeah, I get it, boy. So what's your best recommendation for somebody to beat this horrible addiction?
Well, one thing is if you can take a blend of amino acids and supplement with something that's called 5-HTP. That is actually in my nightcap product, and so that's why you see some of the daytime side benefits, if you will, not side effects.
Now, I want to give you I want to give you a pitch on that, okay?
Yes.
Kelby, are you on? Mr. Kelby Smith?
Yeah, I'm on.
You and I had a really powerful experience with nightcap, and I really want people to know that it sounds like a nighttime thing, which it is, causes deeper sleep, but at the same time, you also get energized in the next day in a way that if you didn't get enough sleep, you're still going to be in better shape. So I really want to recommend that you check out our website at wakinguminamerica.com and drop down, and you'll see Kelby's picture, or you'll see Dr. Rutledge's picture there, and you'll see his telephone number and all of that. And give him a call, because it's really, it's great stuff. Ken, you had something that you wanted to talk about today, right? You wanted to talk about the Constitution. I'm wondering if you had any other ideas after you heard our guest today as well.
Well, that's a good point.
They do affect you, don't they, the guests? You know?
Excuse me, I got a bit of frog in my throat. Absolutely, and as is seemingly always the case in our little chats here, that the points brought up usually stimulate the context that I want to bring in. So to start, I wanted to address the point of the issue of nuclear power and the general issue of energy, because that points to the other subject that was talked about, which is corporatism. Corporatism, as Harvey explained and defined it, is really synonymous with fascism, because it becomes the fascist state that controls hierarchically from the top down by centralizing power and control. Now, if you look at the history of the last 150 years, it is a gradual movement towards centralization. And what does centralization do? It limits capacity and choices of the people. So return to the Republic and understanding the original nature of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence gives us the insight to understand the difference. Just one point I want to make about the energy question is simply this. I understand Dr. Rutledge's point that it looks at nuclear and basically the premise is it's a lesser evil. We need the energy, therefore we have to make a choice. But it's based on a false premise, because that false premise is based on the centralization I'm talking about, that the central government has controlled key issues, primarily money, energy, and now moving into key resources like food, water, land, and all the rest of that. Because if it was decentralized and as a true republic, we were allowed to bring forward the innovative nature of our technology and our capacity, we would decentralize energy, we would open up the tap of money, because money is simply capitalizing primarily energy. If you look at the money-energy relationship, they always move in tandem. So if we moved all of our capacity for the decentralization of homes, transportation, et cetera, we would relieve all of the necessity of the need for these massive centralized units of production, and we would be able to do exactly what we need to do without reliance on nuclear or otherwise.
Perfect.
So be that as it may, moving into the Constitution. What really is the Constitution? It is a social political contract that established something that was required in the 1780s after the Revolutionary War and the Treaty of Peace was signed and the Federation was established, because we did not have a national identity in amongst the nations of the world. So the Constitution was a social political contract to create that national entity and to limit it, and that is the key. It's a contract of limitation, and as a contract, it has contracting parties. So Kelby brought up initially in the talk today this man who was going around trying to debunk the restored America facts. One of the things he says is that the Constitution, when it says we the people of the United States, is for only those people who signed it. But I don't see that at all as being true, because it's a contract. What it was, in effect, was those people who created it, because it says, we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, then it goes and mentions things like justice and common defense and things like that, basically ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. There are two different names there, United States and United States of America. The United States of America were the 13 state republics that had established themselves by the Declaration of Independence, that had been accepted and recognized throughout the world for 11 years and 13 by the time that they ratified it. And when the states came forward and ratified the Constitution, it was the contractual acceptance of the offer. And the offer established a limited entity called the United States, which was limited in its powers and its jurisdiction.
Do you know what year that was, Ken?
Well, 1789 was the ratification, but they did not formally adopt it until the Bill of Rights was accepted as well, which was 1791.
There you go.
So when people say, well, I don't want to go into the Bill of Rights.
no, don't. We can't do the Bill of Rights fairly in a minute, okay?
Yeah, okay. So the bottom line is this. Who were the contracting parties? The United States, which is the federal entity, which could be who this Mr. Livingston is referring to, limited parties. But the contract itself was accepted by ratification by the states, who were delegated in their authority by the people, okay? So the people are the high contracting parties that accepted the offer, created the contract, and the contract, if you read it, limits what the United States as the federal entity is. Plain and simple. Now, I'll finish up by going to the Declaration. It starts out saying, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another. Okay, so that at the time was the people of the colonies with the British Crown. Talking about a political band. When we talk about our Constitution, we're talking about a political band, same thing, which is basically a contract. And then it says, which have connected them with another, meaning the other party, and to assume among the powers of the earth, which means the sovereign powers of the nation states of the earth, the separate and equal station, separate and equal, to separate and identify separately, but equal, co-equal. So when this was established, the people issuing that in 1776 established the republics or the independence of the previously established colonies. And then it goes on in the first paragraph of the Declaration and states a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Well, I believe we have done that for the last 20 years. Just look at the internet. The people of America have established the causes and the reasons why we are compelled to separate ourselves from a political band. Okay? And so that is what is taking place here. And the last point is simply this. What is the authority? Again, it's the Declaration, which basically states as it goes along that it is the right and it is the duty for man, for those individuals or group of people, the Americans, to abolish the forms to which they are accustomed. Well, I'm kind of missing where that is, but basically I think people understand that. That the Declaration established that it is the right and it is the duty. So we are reestablishing that original foundation, and it is completely inaccurate in history to say that the Constitution was never ratified or accepted, because under common acceptance, use, and custom for well over 90 years, the Constitution, the way it was properly set up, was established, and it was upheld many, many, many times in many ways.
Thank you for that, Ken. And
okay.
Thanks for all the things that we're bringing up, all of us, because this is what We're known as intelligent radio. So what we like to do here, besides having our feelings and our answers and our dialogues, is we like to see things moving along and things opening up. And I really am appreciating this conversation. And while we were sitting here doing this today, I actually got an email sent to me by Lynn O'Ryan. And the email is entitled, Hell Explained by a Chemistry Student. And I thought that was pretty interesting because a lot of people in this world actually are perceiving what we're going through is not only, some people call it end times, other people call it Armageddon, other people say it's all over, that Planet X is coming, whatever. So we could say that we're going through a battle of light and dark or heaven and hell, and I thought I would explain hell to you. The following is an actual question given at the University of Arizona on a midterm chemistry test, and the actual answer turned in by the student. The answer by the student was so profound that the professor shared it with the colleagues via the internet, which of course was why we now have the pleasure of enjoying it as well. Bonus question also is hell exothermic, gives off heat, or endothermic, absorbs heat. Most of the students wrote proofs of their beliefs using Boyle's law, which is gas cools when it expands and heats when it is compressed, or some other variant. One student, however, wrote the following. First, we need to know how much the mass of hell is changing in time, so we need to know the rate at which souls are moving into hell and the rate at which they are leaving, which is unlikely. And I think that we can safely assume that once a soul gets to hell, it will not leave. Therefore, no souls are leaving. As for how many souls are entering hell, let's look at different religions that exist in the world today. Most of these religions state that if you are not a member of their religion, you will go to hell. Since there are more than one of these religions, and since many people do not belong to more than one religion, we can project that all souls go to hell. With birth and death rates as they are, we can expect the number of souls in hell to increase exponentially. Now, when we look at the rate of change in the volume in hell, because of Boyle's law, it states that in order for the temperature and a pressure in hell to stay the same, the volume of hell has to expand proportionally as the souls are added. This gives two possibilities. If hell is expanding at a slower rate than the rate at which the souls are entering hell, then the temperature and pressure of hell will increase until all hell breaks loose. If hell is expanding at a rate faster than the increases of souls in hell, then the temperature and pressure will drop until hell freezes over. So which is it? If we accept that the prostitute given the name of Teresa during her freshman year, by prostitute, oh my God, that's not what it said. If we accept that the postulate given to me by Teresa during her freshman year, that it must be a cold day in hell before I sleep with you, and then take into the account that I slept with her last night, then the number two must be true, and that I am sure that hell is exothermous and it has already frozen over, because the corollary of this theory is that since hell has frozen over, it follows that it is not accepting any more souls and therefore extinct, leaving only heaven, thereby proving that the existence of a divine being, which explains why last night Teresa kept shouting, oh my God. Now, the student got an A+ for this, but look at all the different topics.
Well, was his professor Teresa?
Probably. Probably. But what we go through all the time, it literally is a choice that we make about whether we're going to create out of heaven or create out of hell. Now, if you go around and you name all the people in the world, Harvey, that have done bad things, that doesn't create a new future.
No, it just describes Congress.
Yeah, it describes Congress, and that's one of the things. Kelby, this is where I was hoping you and Ken and Dr. Rutledge and Debbie, if you want, we can all step in, because we have created a parallel government, and the Congress that we're selecting is a Congress that actually represents the people. And I wondered if you'd like to say more about that, Kel, because you've been checking out some stuff while we've been on the line.
Say more about the fact that we have, in fact, created a parallel government or re-inhabited the vacated de jure government. It's all a wordplay. The reality for us is... We stepped out of those roles for the last 150 plus years or what have you, and now we are coming back into those roles, and yet we have this overlay of the corporation, what Mr. Wasserman is talking about, and how do we deal with that powerful entity of a corporation, and what do we do, and how do we police and or keep from being policed? So we have a big, you know, task at hand, and it's going to be interesting over the next 20,000 or 30,000 years.
20,000 or 30,000.
How about just 20 or 30?
So you've heard a lot today, Harvey. Where are you getting interested in what we're discussing?
Well, it's all pretty interesting. I mean, I'm still focused really strongly on ridding the world of nuclear power plants and nuclear weapons. I think we've made some progress. There's an attempt to have a so-called renaissance of nuclear power plants, and so far, because of political and economic resistance, it's not happening.
Is it a big cash maker or something? Is that why they want to do it?
Well, it would be for some people, but not for the general public. And it's a cash maker because those people who are pushing it have their hands in the till. And all the money has to come from the public. And so, you know, it's just a vehicle to insert themselves into the public treasury. And the plants themselves actually tend to become irrelevant as time goes on because they're so hard to build and so uniformly behind schedule and over budget.
And so dangerous.
Well, the only good thing about them is that they take so long to build, a lot of them don't get finished, don't get completed. And so what I'm predicting is that actually no new nuclear plants will open in this country, even though billions of dollars will be wasted trying to do it. Because as of now, renewables and efficiency are much, much cheaper than nuclear power.
Has anybody gotten a clever idea yet on what to do with all this waste, the 70,000 pounds that we've already got?
No, nothing that's going to work. I mean, some people are, you know, positing all these theoretical solutions, but there's nothing out there that makes any sense and that has any prospect of really making economic or ecological sense. And so we're stuck with the stuff, and the only answer to it really is to stop creating more of it.
Now, 23 years ago, I actually interviewed Ambassador Thomas Graham on the radio show. Do you know who he is?
No.
He was actually in charge of nuclear weapons for the United States of America, and I was talking to him about Hanford Falls and the what was going up there and the accident and such. And Dennis Weaver was on the show, right? You know Dennis Weaver, great
sure,
environmentalist?
Yeah, yeah.
You could actually hear him gargling while he was talking because of the destruction, the underwater seepage. I mean, it's just endless of what goes on. So I just personally want to say thank you for what you've accomplished. I want to give each member of the team a last-minute comment before we leave, and I just want to say thanks for another important dialogue today.
Well, thank you.
Debbie, any last words?
I just want to say keep on believing, everybody. There's a lot of great things coming down, and as long as people keep working to improve this world, we're going to make it.
Yeah, the bad stuff is falling away. It really, really, really is. Ken, last line here.
Well, if people look at the Republic as it is now established and emerging to expand, that this is the protective umbrella in which those non-centralized, locally based solutions that we all know exist and that Harvey knows can supplant the centralized nuclear and other forms of controlled energy, the Republic will protect it both in a monetary sense as well as a lawful sense where it cannot be attacked or suppressed. So people, come on, the house is open, the mansion has opened, we're airing it out, come help us reoccupy, it's going to be
right on.
A blast. So let's have fun and let's rebuild our country and be the shining beacon that we can be to lead the world back to sanity.
And my tag here is, they're broke and we have the money. Who do you think is going to be able to pull this off? Harvey?
Well, we have always been the source of the energy
it's Harvey's
that creates
turn.
The money. Sorry.
I think that the public has the ultimate power. You know, there's no force more powerful on Earth than an excited and committed and focused population. We've seen the social movements needed to save this planet time and again, civil rights, anti-war, and now the environmental movement. And I personally believe, in the long run, the survival instinct is more powerful than the profit motive. And as soon as we get corporate personhood solved and a few other things, I think...
there's that music.
We'll pull it together.
All right. This program has been brought to you by the Golden Hearts Foundation in association with Kirkgaard Media. Our radio partners, ConeyCompany.com, Dr. James Murphy in Memoriam, and C.W. Wright, our producer. And a big thanks to LALifestyle.com, Nutritional Supplements of the Stars. Visit LALifestyle.com. Sir Jason Winter's Tea, rejuvenate your health with original formulas of a detoxifying tea found in your local health food store. Visit TrySunInternational.com, EMS Global One, Disaster Preparedness and Emergency Management Solutions around the globe. Visit EMSG.org, EMSGO.org. Go visit HarveyWasserman.com. There's probably even a Pete Seeger song there called Solartopia that you just...
Yeah, that's on solartopia.org.
Yeah, there you go.
Solartopia.org.
So next week, invite a friend to listen, and I'm going to have make sure Kelby has more breaking news for you and perhaps everybody else as well, because it's happening. They're broke, and we got the money, and we got God on our side. Like, no kidding. Thanks for listening. And the time you spoke them were
almost ordinary people. Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time on voiceamerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.